Hello, and welcome to Millennial 2017, number 14. And this is with, can you pronounce that for me?
Oh, it's Ler in the Old English.
Okay, and this is Kevin from that channel. And when did you create the channel, Kevin?
Well, I've created it in the September 2014, because in the summer, what got me into Old English, I'll answer that very briefly, that I want to connect myself to my English.
Yeah, answer. Yeah, that was my next question. When so we can just go that way. When did you? How did you get into this? And well, you grew up in Canada, so there is that connection, but you take it from there.
Well, I've always known about Old English since secondary school, and I always thought to myself, I want to be able to read Beowulf to my future children someday. And I've been putting off, and until the summer of 2014, I realized, you know what, let's make this a reality. But attempts in the past, there's not much to learn from it, and the only way you can learn it, officially, is through academia. And by the time you get to first off, you need to go through the English program, and by the time you get through prerequisites, you're met with Old English, but it's taught in a very cold, detached way. It's taught like, oh well, we just learn this language, or we just know where English comes from, and read texts like Beowulf, nothing more, nothing less. I, on the other hand, want to bring the language to life, because there's so much of it that you can get creative. You can do what you want with it, really. Anyway, so the idea of the channel, I thought, you know what? I took the initiative and go through databases and find what materials I can. You know, I thought, you know what? I'll become a resource for everyone to learn from, to inspire people, to connect people to the history. Because before that, all that, I was into Canadian history, folk music in particular, and connecting people to the history. But I thought, I want to go another level of connecting people to the linguistic history. And so I created the channel in 2014 of September. So, yeah.
Right. And how did it, did you start learning there and then, or were you already studying it beforehand?
Well, it really started all 2014. And, before that, I just knew about it, I had in that summer specifically, I put my nose to the grindstone and just really plugged forward and started learning it seriously. Though it was really hard, because Old English, it's like, imagine Icelandic, Dutch, and German all in one, and you have this really complex language. But like, once you get a hang of it, like, oh wow, I could speak a language from 1,000 years ago.
But it's not just Old English, is it, that you're acquainted with?
Not at all. I mean, if you can, on my channel, there's also a link to my second channel called Learning Old Germanic Languages, where I deal with every other Old Germanic language. I mean, I also do Old High German, Old Saxon, and for those of you who don't know what Old Saxon is, it's a language evolved into what we know now as Plattdeutsch, which is located in people who speak that are in northern Germany. And yes, these people are the descendants of the Saxons who stayed in the continent. And Old High German is what we know now as, well, German. But yeah, I mean, I've delved into Old Norse, I've delved into Old Frisian, but my main focus is Old English, because I want to be true to myself. And because thing is, I thought to myself, yeah, I couldn't make more money on YouTube if I did Old Norse because of Vikings and whatnot. But no, I mean, I'd rather choose my own people over gold. Because if we learn anything from the Norse text, that gold is the falsest of friends.
Do you ever get similarity? I mean, you say that. Okay, actually, first, what era is this that we're talking about? When was Old English spoken?
Well, Old English, we're talking about a language that we're talking, 5th century, 6th century, around there. That's when it really, it's been said by many historians that the Anglo-Saxons, well, the tribes, the Angles, the Jutes, the Saxons and Frisians, they came roughly, most historians say 450 AD, and it's only when the kingdoms emerged of Kent, Mercia, Wessex, you know, Wessex comes from West Saxa, meaning West Saxons. Sussex, you know, East Air Saxa. So, yeah, so it's roughly when the kingdoms emerged that Old English is emerged from that, really from when the kingdoms emerged. So, yeah, so hope that answers your question.
Yeah, so, and then it was it sort of phased out from about 1,000 years ago.
Well, I wouldn't say phased out. I mean, it evolved. I mean, what happened in 1066 AD, you have the Norman invasion, and ever since then, English became a peasant language. You know, you know, these words that would come in, like courage, you know, hence courage. You know, before that, you would say mood, and mood evolved into mood. And, you know, in other words, courage, garage, you know, farage, you know, anyway. Yeah, so yeah, you have all these Latin words, but Latin was somewhat of influence before because of the early Christianization and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, you had a whole flux of words coming in and sound changes end up happening. So like 1,000 years ago, for example, you would say the word nicht for day and night, night, but that became night later on. Yeah, so.
I see.
Yeah, a lot to take in.
Yeah, it is. There is a lot. I mean, this is obviously a big field, and I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
And most people who are listening will know nothing about it. Do you speak? Somebody was asking in the text chat. Do you speak Latin?
Do I speak Latin? No. When I was in my teenage, teenagehood, if you will, I used to sing in it, but I don't speak it. But I mean, I would consider Old English my third language. Yeah, because, you know, English and French, because I'm from Montreal, then Old English and then German. Yeah, cause, and like, yeah, once you know Old English, German comes easy. Yeah. Anyway.
Right. Yeah, I was wondering about that, with the connections with Old yeah. High German. Go on.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of similarities. I mean, because thing is, German, Old High German, and Old English, they're from the same family of West Germanic. So, for example, the word friend, Freund, the Old High German is Freund. I mean, it's more or less the same word. I mean, it's just because it comes from the same family group. Yeah, because it's all part of a giant puzzle. Yeah, so, I mean.
Somebody's saying in the text chat that Old English passed into Middle English after about 1100 AD.
Yeah, that's more or less. I mean, it's not like 1066, bang, okay, Old English was phased out, and then, no. I mean, it evolved over time, you know, like, it was something gradual. Like, because languages, they evolve over time. It's not like they're cut, right? Well, I mean...
No. Yeah. Obviously, there are some totalitarian governments who can pull that off.
I mean, give an example, Gaelic in Canada, I've learned recently, it was like, was really stomped down because it's unfortunate, but
you see, the thing is, English is obviously the main language, that sort of the main language of the West, and even beyond that today, and as such it gives people an entree into cheap modern popular culture. And I sometimes wonder if that's one of the main reasons for teaching it to the masses in non-English countries. Yeah. Because obviously it makes them putty for international elites at that stage. Because they're then able to, well, for example, understand the lyrics to a Taylor Swift song. To pick up on something I said in the previous hangout. And Gaelic or something like that, that would give them a layer of insulation between, well, themselves and that international culture.
Yeah.
And it would also give them something of their own, something personal.
Yeah, you know, I mean, language discrimination, I mean, it unfortunately happens. I mean, globalization is a grand killer of languages. I mean, you have people, you know, the part of my channel too, with Old English, is to teach people that there's value in their local dialect. You know, we have words that go back to, you know, my grandfather is from Sheffield, you know, in Yorkshire dialect. We still have words that have, you know, that descend from thou. They say thee and tha, you know, and
yes,
you know, or like in Scots, you have ken, you know, to like to specifically when you know someone rather than to know about something, a subject, you know, I mean, because, you know, these words, every word, every word or name, you know, has an origin, a story behind it. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Actually, Google have an interesting thing. If you put in a word followed by the word etymology, Google actually shows you the etymology of the word. And I discovered this actually quite by accident. It occurred to me that there is no word gorm, and therefore, where did the word gormless come from? And so this was several years ago. So I typed in gormless etymology, and it actually gives you a diagram of, in fact, I'll do it right now. Maybe, hopefully it will still work. The diagram's gone now. That's a shame. Oh, that's a letdown. But it went from English, from Proto-Germanic to Old Norse to Old English.
Okay, actually, I'm looking at. Sorry to interrupt, but yeah, I'm looking at, because when I look up words, my main source, I mean, it's not reliable because it's affiliated with Wikipedia, but it's Wiktionary. It's like a dictionary form. So you put in any word, it'll give you the origin of it, not only the pronunciation and whatnot. Anyway, so gormless comes from dialectal English, gaum, meaning understanding. From Old Norse, gaum, and from Proto-Germanic, Proto-Germanic pronunciation it would be something like chaumas, something like that, meaning heed, attention. Okay.
Right.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
It's very interesting. Because, of course, it just piles on top of, you know, one thing piles on top of another, and you see things coming together, like the suffix less and so on.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, gradually becomes recognizable as the modern word that you know and the modern syntax that you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Structuring of words.
Yeah, what I find... Yeah, sorry, go on.
No, here you go. You go.
No, what I find interesting is that, I guess this is the product of our age now, you know, I guess political correctness, where you have people from Hollywood, you know, like, despite being female, they call themselves an actor, but like, what about actress, you know, that Germanic suffix as a suffix, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's really funny how like people, you know, turn language around and they don't care too much, you know, of its language origins. I mean, I don't know. It's people.
Just, yeah.
Unfortunately.
Etymology.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What was the other? There was another thing I was going to ask you related to this, but well, okay. Let's start with that. How is it? Obviously, this was something that you arrived at for your own reasons.
Yeah.
And you know that doesn't need to be justified, but how would you suggest, how would you advocate, recommend that other people get into this stuff? I mean, why is it interesting? Why is it useful? Why is it nourishing?
Well, it gets, you know, for English people, you know, ethnic English, what I mean by that, I mean, it gets a sense of self that, oh, my local dialect has an origin that, oh, it's worth preserving. I'm a descendant. The way I speak is a descendant of that. And, you know, like once you know Old English, it's like the Swiss Army knife of Germanic languages. I mean, you pick up Old English, you can pick up German just like that, Icelandic just like that. And I'll give you a small example. I mean, the word oven in Old English, oven, is spelt the same way in German and the same gender. So, yeah, because in Old English, you had three genders, masculine, feminine, neuter. So, I mean, it's I would advocate people to not only just get to Old English, but get into a look at, because thing is, you have people from all over the world that get into Old English. What I would hope with that they look inward and like, oh, what about my own old language, you know, or old Japanese or old whatever. I mean, so like, I don't know. I mean, but like we live in a world now where everyone wants to learn English for like,
professional reasons. Or
exactly. Or it's unfortunate.
Or to be able to access the Hollywood American culture.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I've been meaning to do a video about this because several times people have asked me on the Ask FM page about Gaelic, and I mean, I'll just say it in short here. I used to be against that sort of thing because I thought it was pointless. And honestly, I thought it was, I even thought that it was parochial. But now I can see, as I said earlier, I think it would be a very good bulwark against internationalization and homogenization, and just the lack of identity that I think it comes so easily now. It's I think that having that thing would protect people to some extent, which is probably the reason it was taken away in the first place, so as to make them more amenable to social conditioning that was in vogue at the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, with standardization, I mean, it's kind of the idea that, oh, we're all equal now. I mean, we speak the same way, we sound the same, and anything outside of that, I mean, I don't know.
Well, and that's an interesting thing, because regional accents all across Britain are becoming less pronounced. They're becoming more, there is homogenization going on across England and Scotland, everywhere. Yes. With, I believe that there is a single exception of Liverpool.
Yeah,
I believe that, and I don't know this for sure, but I believe the Liverpool accent is actually staying relatively static, or even becoming more sharp, more pronounced. Well, I'm not sure about that, but everywhere else, and it's because of mass media. It's because people grow up hearing the same stuff.
Yeah, because you're exactly, because people think, oh, it's cool to sound like the people on TV or something, or it's like, oh, if I want to advance myself up in the economic ladder, I got to speak
I think it's even subconscious. I don't think it's necessarily deliberate. A lot of young British people, teenagers especially, and also people in their early 20s today, have an American twang.
Oh,
even though they've never been in America, and it's noticeable to me because it differs from the way people spoke in Britain, well, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's product of our age, because of Hollywood, because of YouTube, because it's cool, it's fashionable. It's like, hey, man, you have the erotic R. What I mean by the hard R, like car, far. Anyway, I don't know, it seems fashionable, it seems cool. It's what the cool kids are doing, and it's unfortunate that young people have that. But I mean, I guess as time moves forward. But to be fair, though, I mean, there are societies out there throughout Britain that are wanting to protect these regional dialects and whatnot. Giving an example, the Yorkshire Dialect Society. I mean, they're still around. I mean, they're they exist to protect the language, the dialect, if you will. I mean, there are some I'm going to word this. There are some initiatives out there to, not fully, to hold on to these dialects, because, no one wants to lose their own culture. I mean, any sane person wouldn't want to lose their own culture, but like some people, they surrender their hearts to hyper individualism and all this modern stuff we have now, which is unfortunate. But hey, one can do one's best, right?
Well, absolutely. I think that for now, this is something that has to emerge on, in alternative media. YouTube would obviously be the first thing to come to mind there. Again, as I was saying to my previous guest, I think that we are in the business of creating a subculture that is largely informed by, shaped by, coloured by ancient cultures. It's not a process that's going to be facilitated by the mainstream anytime soon. But again, it's our job to try to change that.
Yeah, I mean, we are living in a trend where, or if you will, a renaissance of people rediscovering their own roots. Particularly with Asatru and or the old English cognate would be Asatreu, or whatever Celtic paganism, you name it. But yeah, I mean, you have people that on an individual level, they're reconnecting to their own roots in some shape or form, but I mean, it's something, I mean, at least people are getting aware that, we need to preserve what we have, or else we'll have nothing,
Well, yes, and we actually literally will have nothing. it's actually quite literally true. So the other thing you wanted to talk about was how this learning these languages brings you into the folklore associated with the people who spoke them. I mean, I remember my English teacher at school saying that she wished that Latin was still taught. At that point, I don't know what it's like now, but at that point in the mid-90s, Latin was not really taught anywhere in Scotland, Scottish schools.
Really?
Certainly not by default. It wasn't available as an option anymore. And she said that she wished it was still taught because, apart from the language itself, you also got to learn the myths and legends. And so... Oh. And that was what made me think, oh, no, it's what made me want to learn Latin for the first time.
Yeah.
But so you wanted to talk about this side of things.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, like I said, every word, every name you know has a story behind it. I mean, the greatest example would be the word earth. Going back to Old English, earth, which is a feminine noun, hence the age-old concept of Mother Earth. I mean, these ancient ideas, I mean, they all have an origin. I mean, the word, like the Norse word Thor, I mean, that's the Norse word for thunder. People, you know, I guess all these ancient ideas, they descend from, I would think, from animism, and then they evolved into and whatnot. And it's really, well, more or less based off of nature, given the linguistic evidence. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, with what I do, not only just with old languages, but like what comes with these languages and also modern dialects, you know, is the fairy tales that come behind them. I mean, there's so much out there. I mean, the past is much closer than we think. I mean, if you go on archive.org and type in Legenden, you'll find so many things in German that, you know, that so many fairy tales that haven't been fully transcribed in the German language wiki source. So that's really interesting, and I've looked at some of them, and some of them do hark back to pagan times. I mean, you know, we need young men and women, you know, to because there's so much out. I'm only one man. I mean, there's so much out there. I mean, give me an example of someone I know. Hang on, like the woman behind a Facebook page I'll mention briefly called Paradise. You looked that up on Facebook. Anyway, this woman behind that, she translated this Sagas of Veluva, which is East Netherlands. And these stories, you know, talk about Thor fighting giants and one like, whoa, this is really neat. I mean, how come this isn't, you know, well known among us? But, you know, I mean, this is so much out there. And you know, there's many ways to get involved and whatnot in helping, making our world more interesting and more lively and rich. Whatnot. I mean, it's just incredible.
Well, indeed, it's a very dense thing. I think that, you know, I think what would be useful is a sort of systematic way for people to get into this, like to start, like to take someone from knowing absolutely nothing to having a basic grasp of the language, so that from that point they could sort of teach themselves.
Yeah, it'll take a lot of self-agency at this point. I mean, like the reason I started my second channel was to inspire people to look into their own languages. You know, like, so, you know, like I'll be like the, I don't know if this is the right word, a trailblazer, if you will, like the start of something. Yeah, I mean, the thing is with the digitization of texts and grammar books and whatnot, I mean, these sources and whatnot and materials are getting easier to access. And I mean, I'm optimistic for the future, you know, in this regard, you know, because
I think that, I think that the ways of learning that are now possible, that are now available to people, make a lot of things possible. Again, you know, I can understand at this stage the mainstream not having any interest in this, but I also think that, so I can understand why they're not going for it, but I think that, thank God, therefore, that we have these alternative media websites where we can do this stuff. And I do think that it's something that's, it just isn't, it's inherently intriguing. And I mean, just for the sake of preserving something, but also I think it's probably more lively than that, because we are here in the present day. Our descendants will, you know, be there in the future doing what they do, and it would be good for them to have this as a tool for them to use, you know, in a proactive manner, not just as something like a museum piece.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, with my knowledge of Old English, and because thing is, with knowing Old English, you know, you can pick up the other languages easy as well, because the further you go back in time, the easier they are. Because the further you go back in time linguistically, the more similar languages are. Anyway, but like, yeah, once you have a grasp, with my grasp of Old English, what I've been doing, I've been creating prayers, devotional chants to goddesses and gods and whatnot to not only just reawaken linguistically, but spiritually as well. I mean, so it's much deeper than, and some of my content, I mean, I talk about, you know, advocating men, you know, to be heroic, you know, that old idea of Germanic heroism, like Beowulf, Sigurd, Aiel and Ingjald and all these other heroes that nobody really knows about. I mean, so.
Do you also find that there are things in, I mean, this is something that people say who are multilingual, that obviously each language has its own strengths and is better, is more optimal for expressing a particular point or a particular emotion. Do you find that with Old English?
Yeah, I mean, because thing is, with Old English, like you look at all the texts, I mean, they're not really meant to rhyme. And they express things differently in a way that you have something called alliteration, where it's not so much on rhymes, rather the line of a poem would be, each word would start with the same letter. You know, like for example, with the first line of Beowulf is Huat we gardena en yer dahum. You know, we got gardena, which means more or less spear dane, and yer dahum. So we have the two G's there. And that's a lot of Germanic literature of the time was like that.
That sounds like a drunk high tea Swedish guy.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, I mean, Old English. I mean, when you actually hear it, yeah, it does sound a bit Scandinavian like. Because thing is, it derives like the Angles. I mean, they're from southern Denmark, northern Germany, and from a district called Anglen, and you know, they were a North Germanic people, and hence, you know, like we associate, you know, these conjugation of the verb to be with, you know, what we are, du art, thou art. I mean, these are like Scandinavian, but the Angles, I mean, this was before the Viking invasion. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, so even before that, we, you know, the English, the Angles, I mean, they are in a way Scandinavian to some degree, I would argue. But some people may say they're West Germanic, but anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything else you want to say about this before we end?
I do think that you know, with older languages, they unlock a spirit inside. You know, like ancestral. I mean, some people may want to say on an obscure level, like cellular memory and whatnot, and hearing old words unlock that the sense of self. And I just want to say, in a number of, just to end it off with a nice bang, if you will, you know, to, and what I'm going to say is, I'm for you in the old traumatic languages, try to attempt, I guess, to unlock that spirit, if you will. That anyway, in old High German, to say I'm for you, it's Ich bin
für dich. No, this is going to be in seven different languages.
Oh yeah, but they all sound very similar. Show that there is a connection, you know, that there is a homogeneity with it. Yeah, okay. So
go for it.
So to the High Germans, you know, when I say that, I'm including Southern Germany, Austria, Switzerland. You know, in your ancient language, to say I'm for you would be Ich bin für you. To the Norse, to the Scandinavians, in your old Norse tongue, Ek en für yder. To the Frisians, in your old tongue would be Ich bin für you. To the Dutch and Flemish, Ich bin für you. To the Plattdeutsch or modern Saxons, if you will, in your old tongue, old Saxon, Ich bin für you. And to the, well, this is an extinct language, Gothic, which I guess some people in northern Spain and northern Italy, or maybe some parts of Scandinavia, may identify with this, Iswiz. And to my English own, I say unto you with utmost pride, Echem for Eo. Because I care. I deeply care about connecting people to the history. Like no one should fall into obscurity,
Indeed. It's very interesting. Yeah. I like that you can obviously the old High German, you can hear modern German there as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually alarmingly similar.
Well, yeah, it goes to show that how the language hasn't changed all these years. So that's another thing to consider, because they all evolve in different ways.
Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating. Well, I think this has been a nice introduction, and I do hope that people have a look at your channel and get into it. Is there anything is there any help that you could use?
Help
in terms of learning the language and developing the channel, perhaps?
Well, I mean, like I try to be multifaceted with my work. I mean, I try to be very diverse in what I do. And if you're going to get into Old English or any old language, don't think you're going to learn it overnight. This is a very very intellectually ambitious thing to do. I would recommend people to have a grammar book. But as far as you're more than welcome to use my channel as like, as you're looking through the book, you listen to the video of mine, so it'd be easier to understand all of it, because it is all these older languages. I mean, if you don't have a background in German or Icelandic, learning these languages is very difficult, but not impossible. It is possible. Then I hope that answers that question.
Indeed. Okay, well, I will link to your channel below, and I hope that people take a look at it and get into this, because it is something that's fascinating and valuable in and of itself, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, of course, forms part of the battle against our homogenization.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, we just got to keep being strong, have a positive attitude, and just keep on moving forward.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, fantastic. Well, thank you, Kevin, from, can you say it again?
Don't worry, no one gets my name right. Lernende Alt English.
That sounds really Scottish,
Scots, it has these, because of isolation, the older sounds, they're still prevalent. That's why it sounds so different than Southern English.
Yeah. Modern English, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing. Okay, well,
I'll
end it there. Kevin, thank you very much. And I hope that people... it was a pleasure. I hope that people have a look at your channel and give it a chance.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, well, the next Hangout is in about 50 minutes. It's with, I believe it's Brittany Pettibone. Let me just check that. Yes, it is. And I'll see you then. So, Kevin, thank you very much. And everyone else, thanks for listening. See you soon.